This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The Treehouse, episode 47. Ahead, so noble and high. With Danny Baker and me, Louise Pepper.
And a very good morning to you, everybody. Here we go, attempting once again to be a good deed in a wicked world. Another 2 hours of fun for old and young, without the slightest hint of vulgarity. Although I suspect, in the bootleg version of this, that 10 minutes we had before we came on the air, touching upon current events, right at the right, that wouldn't have lived up to our usual billing. But we've exorcised that, everyone, and welcome aboard the Treehouse. Now, perhaps, as you... Sorry, mate, you're going to say something?
No, I was going to say, it's just our equivalent of walking into the office while you take your coat off.
Yeah.
And have that bit of, who's got the kettle on? We just had to settle down. Cover
anyone else,
main event.
Anyone else come on the 8313? Anyway, but that is not our brief. So here we go. There was always a little business to be done beforehand, looking into highways and byways on this day in history, but not in the usual way. And we could have, well, I mean, I suspect other podcasts, because I'm aware there are other ones, probably would say, wow, what a day for birthdays. You got your Peggy Lee, George Formby, Al Jolson, Robert Morley, Peter Cushing, Miles Davis, John Wayne, Levon Helm, Lauryn Hill, Lenny Kravitz, all birthdays today, right?
So
that's just in your kind of musicians' pop culture. By the way, Peggy Lee, according to the always tremendous Reverend Richard Coles today, was discovered by the wife of Conservative MP for Shrewsbury, who sponsored a private members' bill for the sale of surgical trusses. Now, that's the kind of thing I would normally think, but he got there first on that.
Wow!
And Peggy Lee's real name? Norma Dolores Eggstrom. That's her real name. So, there's plenty. Incredibly, I missed one off that list. It's my dad's birthday. Spud would have been 92. No, don't tell people that, 92. Anyway, but I can't imagine the old man, 92, but there it is. But all of those are shoved to one side. And we start the show any second now, everyone. There's a clock ticking somewhere. So it just as a little aperitif, John Reed in Texas, a lawman in Texas. His birthday today, you probably don't know him as John Reed, perhaps.
No.
But you might know him, because he made his first appearance today, as the Lone Ranger.
Oh!
As the Lone Ranger.
I don't think I've ever actually watched the Lone Ranger.
No, I don't. Now, the thing is, and of course, here we are in a brand new future where everything's better than ever was. And the idea that, you know, young gals play with dolls and boys play with cowboys and Indians, it's been absolutely shattered, that, although it bears some truth. But I never liked cowboys at all. Never liked cowboy films. Didn't like anything like that. And Lone Ranger meant absolutely nothing to us.
No.
Nothing to us.
Others were not into it at all.
No, but the Lone Ranger. Cowboys. But then again, we must bend at the knee and say, well, there are plenty out there who does, of course. And Tonto is Jay Silverhills, whose birthday it is today as well.
No way.
It really, really is.
No.
It really, really is. Honestly, as we talk, it's May the 26th. You can look at all of these. Of course, he gave the Lone Ranger his other name, which is Kemosabe, which means the trusted scout, and all of that. By the way, and I promise you that this is all a preamble to something else, and I know you've got things to do out there, like riot in the streets, if the current mood of the nation is anything to go by. But
socially distanced, right?
He wore the Lone Ranger because he didn't want anyone to know he was John Reed. One of those the weakest, flimsiest mask in the world. The Domino Black Mask, the little Harley Quinn mask, as worn by Robin in Batman and Zorro. Now, that is a really ridiculous mask, isn't it? It really is. Only people you ever see wearing those are people in homemade porn films who don't want to be recognised. That's all you ever see.
That is not what I was expecting.
No, I know. But I've seen stills from these things, and you think, mate, I used to read the News of the World, I'll own up. But you always saw those, and you thought, mate, I don't know. It's not even a bank robber's mask. But so there we have the terrible mask you used to wear, the flimsiest of all. Second flimsiest. They used to sell Guy Fawkes masks that were made out of cardboard. The only mask you could buy. The rioters now put that face on it, you know, with the little pencil.
Yes, the V for Vendetta, isn't it?
V for Vendetta one. But they used to sell those in pastel colours, red and green, and you put them on your guy if you went penny for the guy. But the little bit of elastic they added them was the flimsiest thing known to me. Honestly, I didn't have a very big head when I was a kid. I'm not my brother-in-law, Rod. And we've got a great email about big heads in a minute.
I've got a massive head.
We used to. Have you, oh yes, you told me that before. Well, you'd have been no good for this. They petered out about 75, but it was a little bit of elastic, and I mean a little thin bit of elastic, with two staples either side that you were supposed to, of course, snap over your head. Well, as soon as you stretched it this far, donk, it was gone, and you had to hold it on your face. You can't hold a mask on your face. So anyway, the point being, Peps, it's at the Lone Rangers and J.C. Silverheel's birthday, but today in 1615.
Starts
any second now. The sedan chair made its first appearance on the streets of London. Now, all of us, yeah, go on, Peps, what?
I was about, in these times of less pollution and traffic, the sedan chair needs a comeback. Sure.
You'd think so, but it's not so much a sedan chair. It's getting the four, let's face it, men to pull you around.
Oh, yeah,
I'll get to something about that in a second, but I looked up what the definition of a sedan chair is. Of course I did. And it's a windowed cabin carried on poles. Now, it is. It's a windowed cabin, and you're carried on poles. Sometimes it can be a bed or a couch with curtains.
Now, that's
people used to get in bed and be carried around the streets, living the dream. And they were often preceded by what is known as link boys. How about this? Link boys were a very common sight in the 16th and 17th and some of the 18th century. They were children who would at night would light your way with lit torches of pitch and tallow through the streets. And they were called the link boys. And they would head in front of your sedan chair, too. Apropos what you just said, in the 70s, it said, when I was looking up, Bath resident and entrepreneur John Cunningham revived the sedan chair business for a short amount of time. I bet it's lovely to think about. But what kind of job description? Hello, you advertised in the Courier for your work? Yeah, yeah. I want you to carry me through the streets.
Have you got three friends?
Exactly. Well, in Bath, because these boys used to walk in front of it, the link boys. They were
basically your headlights.
Popular. Yeah, your headlights. But in Bath, I was reading, several houses still have link extinguishers outside, giant candle snuffers they are, and the houses have them because obviously at the end of the shift, the kids needed to put them out. And in Bath, several houses still have their giant candle snuffers.
Wow.
And so, Peps, this leads us, I promise you, the last thing before the show, I thought, I wonder if Amazon sells candle snuffers. there's a page and a half of candle snuffers.
What's blowing them out?
Well, it's usual on this, if you've heard the show before, and if you haven't heard the show before, it's on its way. This is all the orchestra tuning up. But the candle snuffers on them, disappointingly, most of them have got 5-star reviews. Which makes you think, I suppose so, what could go wrong with it? Although you can, and you'd be more interested in this with your carousel of fireplace instruments.
My fire irons.
You can buy whole sets of snuffers and their accoutrements. You get in the sets a snuffer, a wick trimmer, a candle cutter, and a candle wick dipper, all designed to meet, one said, your candle demands.
What's a candle wick dipper?
I don't go to a Candlewick Dipper. It sounds, again, obscene, but and I went all through them. They're all 5-star reviews. They all look the same, really. They are some kind of, you know,
brass or something, aren't they?
Brass cap with a long stick. But then at the bottom, there was our friend. Only had 2.5 stars, which means some of the reviews would have been negative. And all other, so I looked at them, and here, ladies and gentlemen, are the exhaustive research results for finding bad reviews of a candle snuffer on Amazon. One just said, "Don't waste your money. This doesn't work." Now, how it couldn't work isn't explained, but a little further down, somebody says, "I held this snuffer over the flame for ages, and it still didn't go out."
Now, is that user error?
I was going to say, the phrase "you only had one job" springs to mind here. But I held the snuffer over the flame for ages. As you say, what about... Didn't you ever think about that? Why would you stand there for ages trying to get...
Got to get over it as well. Plunge.
I like them. I like the idea of that. I do like the idea of that. And there's a great old joke about a candle snuffer for another time. But I like the idea of putting that little cap over it and going out. It's exhausted of oxygen. But anyway... You can go on there now, ladies and gentlemen. Sort yourself out from the many, many candle snuffers there are. But beware of the one that plainly doesn't work, even if you hold the snuffer over the flame for ages. What are we doing this morning, Peps?
Number one, breaking things in shops. Number two, stuff you found while renovating. Number three, terrible plays and songs you wrote as a kid. Number four, the world's dullest job. And number five, when cute animals attack.
We have got, fortunately, tremendous responses on all of those. And if you did get in touch about any of the subjects, they all remain on file. And we do, every 3 shows or so, do a roundup of those we have missed. But nothing is wasted. What have you got for us, Peps?
Well, this is a dull job from Jay. It says, "Back in 1994, I worked with my friends at the Walker's Crisp Factory in Thurmaston. We were excited to be doing the double at the time by sourcing a local job agency who gave you a different name, paid you a flat 90 quid, creamed a ton of money off the top, and then didn't tell the DSS. I had come over from Belfast for the summer after graduating, and the IRA had blown up my local job centre, so there was no need to physically sign on. This was handy. Upon entering the factory, I was introduced to a crisp supervisor who buddied up with me for the day to show me the ropes. I was put onto a 6-pack lane and became Mr. Cheese and Onion. As Mr. Cheese and Onion, my sole job was to pick up 2 individual pack of crisps in each hand from a conveyor belt, pop them into the 6-pack bag, which would then go onto another conveyor belt. I had 8 hours training for this. And this was to be my job for 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, and all the crisps I could eat. After day 3, my brain had completely switched off. So I decided to mix things up a bit by adding 3 packs sometimes, sometimes 4, sometimes none. It got so bad, I started to write fake hostage notes, saying things like, if you find this note, I am trapped in Walker's, send help, etc.
I would love to get one of those.
And slipping them into the bag. However, I must have seemed to have excelled at picking up and dropping crisps, as after a month I was promoted and became crisp supervisor. I then had to show the trainees, again over an 8-hour period, how to pick up 2 bags of crisps and drop them into a larger bag. I lasted 4 more weeks in the job before my IQ dropped into double digits and I had to move on to pastures new for the sake of my sanity. And I have never eaten Walker's Cheese and Onion ever again."
So there you are. You see, this is a salute to those who, you know, on behalf of all of us, had to do these mundane jobs, which have now been replaced by machinery,
which
is not a bad thing. Here's one here. How about this? And again, I'm sorry, the name has dropped off this, but you know who you are. For a while, I worked as a stock taker in B&Q's overnight. We had to count everything. I had to count individual screws. I promise you. Imagine 12 hours counting screws. It was monotony on an evil level. Somebody else here, again, I'm sorry.
Is that not one of those initiation, go and...
No, apparently. Because people help themselves. I mean, people do help themselves. You can always tell. Yeah, you can see when someone's on the hoist. That is my old man's birthday. My old man had a tremendous thing he used to do, certainly to me when I was about 13, 14, but he did it to his friends, and I suppose lots of people did. You'd be standing in a store, let's say Selfridges in London, perhaps. Imagine that this happened to you for your own parent. You might, supposing you were standing there, I don't know, in one of the handbag aisles or something, right? And you're looking around. My old man would walk away from you and then walk fast towards you when there was a few staff within earshot and he would say, Dan, shh, store detective. And I said, but what? Oh, I don't know. Well, so what about, hello? And he would keep walking. And of course, all the staff would look at me. He would do that. He did it to my mum. He used to do it to my mum. Bet, store detective. So what? As loud as she could. He would shout it across Marks and Spencer's. Bet, watch out. Store detective. I promise you. That was one of the old man's favourite gags. Dad, I'm going in there. Don't put your head in the door in a minute and say store detective. He would do that. Anyway, here's another one. When I first started in the jewellery trade in Birmingham, I had a job soldering cufflinks, the older style with the chain. I used a tiny conveyor belt, think about the size of an old VCR recorder, and I would apply solder, put the cufflinks on the conveyor belt and retrieve them from the other side. The company, I promise you, was called Zender. I have worked in an attic at the top on this tedious task. Of course, I was the prisoner of Zender. it's very good of you to say, come forward and say these tedious jobs that somebody had to do. But give us something else from over there, perhaps.
This is from Juliet in Bedfordshire, breaking things in shops. August 1979. I was 9 years old on holiday in Lowestoft. My mum dragged me into the gift shop and said, stand there and don't move. Over there, it turned out to be next to a large display unit in the middle of the shop containing glass trinkets and the like.
Ah.
Oh dear, oh very dear. I was wearing flip-flops for the first time and managed to wedge one of them underneath the display case. I panicked, tried to yank it out, but lost my balance. The display case and a good proportion of contents crashed to the ground. I burst into tears and mum almost fainted. She offered to pay for the breakages, but the shopkeeper must have taken pity on a weeping child trying to retrieve a lost flip-flop. To try and make it up to the shopkeeper, I bought a leather elephant-shaped purse, a small ornamental cash register, and a glass bird with a nodding head, if you remember those. I still have them to this day, but the flip-flops were never worn again.
Oh, I was just on that, Juliet. Because it's the old man's birthday, and those extraordinary items bought there. Do you remember, of anyone out there, the first present you bought for either your mum and dad on their birthday that you were very proud of? Because I do. I remember being about seven, and I saved up 2 and 6. When I say saved up, I probably asked my mum for it, but nevertheless, in my memory, I saved up from my job counting peanuts. Anyway, but the actually, my job, if you heard the last podcast, wrapping bad fruit in tissue paper. But I saved 2 and 6, and I went to a kind of news agents called Jack's that used to be on the far side of the estate, where I noticed days before they had fountain pens on a card, lots of different fountain on a card on their wall. And I bought my dad a yellow one. It was 2 and 6, and I remember that was the first present I bought him, and the pride, and of course the fuss he made. Well, look at that, it's got to be gold and all of this, and it didn't. But hearing those items bought there, and on me and dad's birthday, I do remember that the very first item I bought for anyone in our family, on my own, under my own steam, was a 2 and 6 fountain pen. Anything like that, Pat?
I have a feeling I probably got my mum a little trinket pot from, now I think about it, we talked about shops that did two things. There was a shop in Upminster that was half a video shop called Penny Farthing, mm-hmm. Weird name for a video shop, and the other half was called Pretty Pots. Oh. And that's why it used to sell nice things. And I have a feeling I bought my mum a little trinket pot from there. But I also, it suddenly occurred to me the other day, was buying things when you went on a school trip. Mm-hmm. And I remember I'd buy my dad anything with a steam train on because he loves steam trains. And
oh, wow.
My dad won, you know, an enamel badge with a steam train on.
I think I told you before, the only school trip that bears the name, we once went to Germany and Switzerland. Now, I remember it was £58 and you had to pay off instalments over a year. £58.
How old were you?
11. So it's about 68, 69. And our school didn't, you know, it didn't go in for things like that. But they announced that for those who wanted to go, we were doing it wasn't an exchange, but we had to pay, I mean, £58. And my old man goes, sure you want to go on this? And I was still taking £1 a week to be ticked off. Everyone else had ticked it off by January. And then so I said, I've got to finish it up next week. They were going on Saturday. How much are you still in arrears? So I'd say, I think you still got to give him 17. 17 quid? Fucking all right. Anyway, so away we went. It was a pretty uneventful. We really did go to a cuckoo clock factory, I promise you.
Oh, yes.
We really did. We stayed in a nondescript town. I don't remember much about it. But I do remember the present I brought back for my mum and dad. And I'm 11, remember. It was a massive knife with the flag of Switzerland on it. And it was about 12 inches with a sheath. I brought that back on the coach through customs. And then, you know, and I always wanted them to put it on the wall, but they didn't. They left it in a drawer. Anyway,
That's all right.
As you can see, I'm a fully rounded adult. Right, before we do the advert, I'll bring you this. I think this is about fruit injuries, which we can stretch the rules a little for. This is from our friend Paul, who lives in Badi Bassit in Brazil. In Brazil.
Ooh.
People listening to us in Brazil. Oh. Anyway, he says, your podcasts have been the soundtrack to my lockdown 5 milers around the locale. Quite what my good neighbours make of the sweaty puce stranger lolloping around to the sound of the Golden Shot. Vinyl game is anyone's guess, although it does seem to help with the old 2-metre rule. Thank you very much. Now, you may think Brazil is a land solely acquainted with pleasure, carnival, football, beaches and the like, but there is a more sinister side. I'm not talking about the favelas or the somewhat skew with present, not even the nasty little fish that goes a place no fish could go. No, for true horror, you need to look no further than the cashew apple. I first visited Brazil 14 years ago, lucky enough to be sent on a month-long work trip to see the local sugar industry up close and personal. Being my first time in the country, I was open to trying every kind of new and exotic food I could find. The meat is obviously the main ingredient here, but going to the fruit market was particularly educational. Who knew that the cashew is not only not a real nut, but also that it grows out of the bottom of an apple-shaped fruit? I didn't know. I had no idea about that.
No.
It's not a nut. I did know that bit. I didn't know it grew out of the bottom of an apple-shaped fruit. Thrilled at this discovery, I asked a stall holder for one of the shiny orange fruits with the faux nut attached, readied myself for a taste sensation, and dived in. To a crushing disappointment. Neither bitter nor sour, the fruit nevertheless managed to be mouth-puckering and spirit-crushing. How could something so exotic yield so little enjoyment? I thanked the vendor for the example, excused myself for not wanting any more, and consoled myself with at least having the cashew nut to enjoy. As I clamped my jaw around the shell, I assumed the vendor's frantic waving was to discourage me from damaging my teeth. No problems here. I'd bitten through pistachio shells before, and these pearly whites have always stood up to the task. But as the shell cracked and gave way, a sharp pain registered in my mouth. Sharp, indeed, and burning. In my mouth, on my tongue, across my lips, and down my chin, a foul acid descended. Agony. That Senor Greengrocer seemed to find it all rather funny. Well, it turns out that cashew nuts have a double shell. Between the two shells lies a reservoir of anarchic acid, a potent skin irritant related to toxic oil found in poison ivy. The scarring from the burns remained for several weeks and remained present upon my return to the London office, prompting numerous questions to how exactly or where exactly I've been putting my face on my travels. Strangely enough, it took some persuasion to convince my colleagues that the facial rashes were down to fruit and fruit alone. How about that?
I'll never complain about the price of a cashew nut again.
I know.
They're expensive.
They're a nut within a nut within a fruit.
Within
and
acid?
They're not even nuts. And they're full of acid. They are full of acid. How about that? They're like they're the alien of the Nostromo. And that's the Nostromo is the fruit. And in there is the
extraordinary.
Alien.
Extraordinary.
I hear that, everyone, and bear it in mind. And kids, if you're listening, cashew nuts have long, pointy teeth. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back.
Hello, I'm Jay Rayner and I host the Out to Lunch podcast, where I take fabulous guests out for lunch and grill them to a turn. For now, whilst lockdown reigns supreme, we're staying in for lunch instead, and we've got great company. Fascinating people share only the best takeaways with me over webcam. Great food and insightful conversation with the likes of Gary Neville, Sharon Horgan, George Ezra and Dieter Von Teese.
Have you ever had a cream pie in the face?
No. So if you, like me, enjoy food and are missing restaurants, subscribe to Out to Lunch with Jay Rayner, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, everybody. It's the Danny Baker Show, radiating out across the airwaves. Come the sunshine or the rain, come aboard the Danny train. We'll kick our slippers off and throw our cares away. What better thing to do than have a jolly jape or two? Don't touch that dial, there's nowhere else to go. Come and join a happy session, wave ta-ta to the recession on the Danny Baker Show.
Take it away, Danny.
And we're back via Wisby there. Thank you very much indeed. Now, before we move on to our esteemed and pressed caller who's on the phone and called Alexa, which these days, of course, as she well knows, causes great confusion. Perhaps one of the subjects we're doing is terrible plays and songs you wrote as a child. And our correspondent Daniel gets in touch. He says, "You won't want to call me, I'm in Israel."
Exotic fan base today.
It is. Well, that is the nature of the podcast, of course. I still have a T-shirt you sent me when I rang you on Radio 1. Man, them were the days, eh? On a Sunday morning, to answer your question about the connection between Ethel Merman and Bob Dylan. It was too easy and you weren't impressed. I don't know the connection between Ethel. I've forgotten. But Plank, look at that. How about that? Right, I set a question, and then when Daniel rang in and gave me the right answer, I said it was too easy and I wasn't impressed. I set the question and now I can't remember it. Oh, man. Anyway, somebody might want to get in touch with us about that. Anyway, he says, "I provide you a song called Mild Confusion. The lyrics were written by me very long time ago. The music was by nobody ever, thank goodness. This is a terrible song he wrote and he still got it. And the words go like this. Last night I met two girls. One had straight hair, one had curls. I knew from then on that I wanted those two. Nobody else, just you and you. I'm in a state of mild confusion. I'm in love with two girls, not an illusion. I don't know which one to take, because without either of them, my heart would break. I've tried to woo them both, but it just wouldn't work. Because both of them thought I was something of a Burke. So now I've lost them both, but it doesn't really matter, because I've met two more beauties who I think are even better." Oh, my friend, bravo.
Oh, that's a fine example.
Here on the day after Bob Dylan's birthday, we're celebrating that, and what he's got to do with Ethel Merman, we don't know. Pipe aboard our caller, Peps.
Right, here is Alexa.
Hi there. Hello,
Alexa.
Hi, guys. Morning, how are
you? Thank you so much. You're good as God. I'm sorry you had to hear that most painful doggerel before we came on.
What can I say? I couldn't write any better.
It's very good of you. Unlike me, apparently, when he rang in and I told him his answer was no good because the question was too easy. A question, Alexa, I had said. And I was so disappointed, probably somebody got it. What can we do for you this morning, Alexa? What's the story? What have you got?
Right. The story is when cute animals attack. Back in 2010, I'd gone out to South Africa during the World Cup to help volunteer at one of the local lion parks in Johannesburg.
I was out there and I believe we could have met. How about that?
Wow.
I was there at the time, and in Joburg,
how'd you get that job, by the way? During the World Cup, I'd like to come over and volunteer the Lions, please.
I've been there the year before to on a particular company, and they said, it's going to be pretty crazy during World Cup, and I just thought, spare the moment, why not? Why not? It'd be a good chance to do something a bit different. I'd already been there, I knew some of the Lions Club, knew how it worked. So, yeah, I was out there, and it was pretty crazy. Yeah, the funny thing is...
What did the job entail there, Alex? I mean, standing there with pamphlets and when people asked where
No, something like that. There was some, you took ticket receipts, you would help clear out the lion cubs, you'd help feed the lion cubs, you know, you'd help with them. There's like a touch of cub enclosure where people come in and they could like touch the lion cubs.
And it was just for the duration of the World Cup, was it?
It ended a little quicker than that. There was some flight problems, so I decided to come home early. And it just so happened that was when England came home.
Whoops. Alexa, you've lost about as long as the team. So, but my sister volunteered during the Olympic Games in London. She did in Greenwich and a lot of things. And she was put in a booth. No tourist pods at all, in case anyone had any questions. I remember her saying to me, I have to sit in this booth, and I hate it because they give you this blazer to wear. She said, I look like a right old frump. volunteering is replete with trouble. Anyway, someone who's worked with lions wants to tell us about when cute animals attack. Where you go?
Right. So anyway, after a couple of hours on my shift, I decided I could take a little bit of a break. And one of the perks was that you could go sitting with the meerkats. You know, little cute little things. You know, you see them scrabbling around, and you know, you stand up in the morning, getting the morning sun, and they cutely chirp, and all of that is really quite sweet. So I thought, oh, okay, you know, I'll take a bit of time, take a bit of rest out, and they start crawling all over you, and they sniff your ears, and all of that. And it's all very sweet. It is. And then one of them decided to go sniff up my nostrils. Like, it's a bit personal, but closer. And then next thing you know, it does it again and then bites my nose. Now, these are like needle sharp teeth. These are like little cats. And and all of a sudden the blood started pouring and it's like, oh my God, I'm not only am I in trouble because you shouldn't really let them get that close to you, but I'm surrounded by tourists from all over the world. And then all of a sudden, this volunteer stands up with, you know, blood pouring out, and it's like, oh my God, I'm going to be in so much trouble. Luckily, some.
They don't do this in the adverts to Coronation Street, do they?
No, you would have thought I'd have got some sympathy from my boyfriend back in England at the time. He went, no, he just laughed at me. He said, I told my brother, and he went, did you ask about car insurance? It's like, oh, thanks, guys. Thanks, guys.
And believe you, you've already had enough injury here, and I don't want to add insult to it. But the members of my own family can answer to this. Does the end of your nose in any way resemble some kind of berry or strawberry? You might like a drop of gin, Alexa. I don't know.
I have no idea. My nose isn't, you know, it's a little bit over to the bottom. You know, it's nothing like. I mean, obviously, by the end of lockdown, I probably will have a drinker's nose, but that's kind of by the by.
You are leaning against an open door here. But it didn't require stitches or anything. You were fine.
No. Thankfully, not. It was just I kind of pressed my nose, a bit like a nosebleed, and within a few minutes, it was like I managed to find the guy who gave me loads of tissues and thanked him and sloped off quietly to the kitchen.
Well, who'd have thought when you took a job with lions that it would have been Brer Meerkat who actually was the threat? And that was the whole point of asking when cuddly animals attack. Alexa, I can't tell you how pleased I am with the story and you being with us this morning. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Wonderful. Bye-bye, Alexa. That's it. Fellas who want to name every band they've seen when they come on the air, take notes of that, Alexa. Boom, in, out. Terrific story. That was just stupendously good. So I've got a story in a moment, which hopefully Alexa will get balm from, because it's a very similar tale. But in the meantime, Peps, what you got?
Well, this is from Mike. Stuff you found while renovating. I'm currently renovating a house in France that's been empty for 30 years, judging by the 1989 calendar in the kitchen. In the attic, as well as boxes of 1950s French newspapers and Paris Match magazines, we found beautiful printed lemonade bottles, wooden skis, gun cases, and a package the size of a small loaf wrapped in tinfoil and tied with string. Glinting in the dust-filtered rays of light, squinting between loose slates, it was hanging from a rusty nail, untouched since at least the fall of the Berlin Wall. With the aid of a shovel and some long sticks, the parcel was lowered to the floor and tentatively opened. It was a piece of ham.
Oh, I've been hanging that long. Beautiful. Lucky to get it. Now, you have to just... I mean, ham can't go off, I think I'm right in saying.
No, it's up there. It's already cured, right, isn't it?
Yeah, it's honey I think I'm thinking of. Because, you know, they sound... honey never goes off. I promise you, Peps, I know you think I pull this stuff out of the air, but... The whole point is, it's true. They found honey when they found Tutankhamun's tomb, and they found the honey, and it was still good after 2,000 years. Honey, bees know what they're doing. Bees know what they're doing. They're not an iPhone. They make these things to last. Anyway, but honey can't go off, but a ham maybe. We don't know what the correspondent doesn't say.
He said in brackets, I hope it was ham.
Yeah.
No, I don't think he tried it.
Tommy Cooper used to do a joke where he would say West Ham, East Ham, and then pick up a ham, put it through his nose, and go, poof, old ham. Now, there's your Tommy Cooper for today. This is a wonderful letter. It is about they couldn't believe you wrote back. This is from Jim in Dublin. My father passed away a month ago. I'm sorry to hear that, Jim. Going through his things, I found something he never told me about, and I frankly couldn't believe. In fact, he must have forgotten he received it, because it was a letter and a signed photograph from Peter Sellers.
Oh!
My dad was a massive Goons fan and often told me about meeting them at the stage door after recording of one of their shows. But he never told me Sellers wrote to him, though. He must have written to him in about 1955, and this was his response. I'm definitely going to frame it. Now, Jim, that's fantastic, but all of us are saying, what did it say? What did it say? Is there any way you could scan that letter?
Oh, he didn't give it to you.
No, there's no letter attached to it. No, he knows how to write. He knows how to keep people coming back. Join us at this cinema next Saturday to find out. No, he hasn't said what it is.
Oh.
I've got from Greenwich Market over the years, so many things I've picked up. And these days, of course, that's all gone. The idea that people just turn up and sell stuff because of eBay and everything else. But over the years, the finds I've had in the street markets, including I bought a copy of Hard Day's Night, just because I'd never used to leave records lying there. I thought, I don't want to leave that lying there for 50 pence, you know. So even though I've had two copies, it was a proper original copy of Hard Day's Night. And I brought it home, and inside of it was the call sheet from A Hard Day's Night. Somebody had got...
No.
Yeah, and I tweeted it the other week when I found it again. And it says, you know, the date at the top, I think it's like 30th of March, 1964. Artists required, Mr. Lennon, Mr. McCartney, Mr. Starr, their dressing room numbers, their stand-ins names, what was required on set. And it's the scene in Hard Day's Night when they go to the tailors, or they certainly are backstage, and I think it's... there's the fellow there with the tape measure around his neck, and I think George uses the word grotty for the first time. And it says they needed scissors, a mannequin, various props. It says one large piece of machinery. I don't know what that is. Mm-hmm. Some cynic on Twitter said that, well, that'll be the cocaine. I said, not 1964, the Beatles hadn't met Dylan yet. So yeah, lots of code for cocaine. John insists on one large piece of machinery. Although,
isn't it in A Hard Day's Night,
yes,
where he...
You're absolutely right. But he takes the coke in the bottle. But we know now for a fact that they didn't even smoke dope by that point. They had plenty of Prellies, which was the speed. And anyway, we're drifting into the Beatles. But the fact is, I found this Hard Day's Night call sheet, which I've still got. And I picked up a Goons album signed by Milligan, Secombe and Sellers on the back, which is extraordinary.
Oh,
yeah, £2. I've got so much stuff. Well, anyway, I'm sure other people can join in on that. So give us something over there, Peps.
Well, this is from Steve. He says, hearing a talk about graveyards the other day, this is just a couple of weeks back, reminded me of this tale. You may remember me for my LSD-drenched tale of thunderstorms and roundabouts.
Oh, yeah. The fella took acid, and then... I'm sorry, it's taken a narcotic turn, the show. On a very early show, this one of our very earliest ones, and he lay on a chart, him and his friends, experiencing a tremendous trip. Made it better at night, it was. They all got in a children's playground and lay on the roundabout and went round and round while a thunderstorm played out above them. Now, that was a very evocative tale. Off he goes.
Well, as he says, we had to make our own entertainment, and we were rather fond of a drink or two. I think this is before they found the LSD. One night, Paul swiped a large bottle of schnapps from his parents, peach schnapps. Oh, what?
There's an old hangover coming back. There's a schnapps flashback. Look at your face.
Archer's the lemonade. We needed somewhere discreet to neck this stolen hooch. We live close to the then abandoned St. George's Church in Camberwell and felt the graveyard is a perfect place to relax. We clambered through a broken fence and rested against a Gothic headstone and got sloshed coming up with spooky tales. As we began to totter off towards the exit after polishing off the bottle, one of us, maybe Des, said, "What if we get struck down for getting drunk in here?" Then, as if on cue, Paul disappeared. We looked at each other, looked at where he used to be, and legged it. Panic-stricken and drunk, we scrabbled through the fence and peered back to where our friend has met his fate and heard manic laughing from below the earth.
Oh.
We tentatively wandered back across the graves and found Paul had stepped into an open one.
No.
Luckily, long stripped of any contents and no real harm. And in the end, we took stick for screaming as we ran away. And we laughed all the way home. What strikes me now is what good friends we were. As soon as one of us was dragged into the underworld, the other three of us had it on our toes before the dust had even settled.
See, this is a sitcom standard. If there's an open grave, one of the cast is going to fall into it. We know that. Very popular, again, my brother and his mates mainly, only ever went once, Nunhead Cemetery, close to where I'm in South London. Very, very, Highgate gets all the heat, but Nunhead, which at one time was a very well-to-do district, used to have one of the great Gothic experiences of the Nunhead Cemetery. It was completely overgrown. Sometimes there'd be like 20-foot obelisks dedicated to some local businessman. And a lot of the graves had collapsed and you could see steps going down into vaults. It was the most extraordinary place. It got a grant like 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Now it's a very pleasant place. They've done it up. They've got everything's been replaced, you know, in memory of those great, but it was a much better place when you just go there. And the only time I went there with me and my mates, and it was very, really terrifying. It's a big overgrown woods, but there's graves everywhere. And as I say, occasionally you see one of the slabs rendered in two, like a lightning bolt would hit it, and you see stairs going down into a family crypt. And I remember one of them, we were all saying to each other, "Go on, walk down. I'm not going down there. Well, you go down there." "No, I'm not going down there." And one lit a match. We said, we stood there for ages saying, "Let's go down or let's not go down there." And as soon as we decided, Lenny was going to go first, as soon as his foot went up to the top step, we went, "Oh, whoa, whoa," a voice from down below, possibly my brother and his mates, went, "Piss off." They're already getting in there. It did. And I apologise, you know, we don't usually use the epithets on here, but that's exactly what came up. "Piss off." Well, that's kind of dissipated the Gothic mood. Yeah, these kids, we were much younger than them, of course. This is from this is a terrible play you wrote when you were young and just signed by Kay. At school, we had something called the House Comps, a normal secondary, and it consisted of stage performances we had to write.
Oh, we had that.
Did you?
House drama alternated with house music.
Did you write a play?
I was house captain, no. We always used, you know, Grease or Steve Malone or whatever.
No, well,
I had to direct house music when I was house
captain. Did you? Mm-hmm. Wow, the old auteur and you're coming out again. Here we go. It said the final item had to always be a short play, which we ourselves had written in year 11. We were given a title, which we could be taken in different ways. Our year was given the title The Wait, as in W-E-G-H-T or W-A-I-T. We wrote a play which consisted of a horrendous crime being perpetrated off stage and Superman needing to queue to get changed in a phone box. The Wait. I myself took the role of a flasher, heavy breather, pushed to the front of our hero to harass a victim on the phone. I promise you, it was much, much worse than it sounds. He then follows up by saying, "You've asked about boring jobs too." Say that, it could be Kay. I do apologize, it could be just Kay. She says, "For a couple of years, I worked in a lab as a senior chemical analyst testing asthma inhalers. Each inhaler has between 200 and 240 shots. Go on. Ask me how I know." Literally, day in, day out, I'd fire asthma inhalers into a fume cupboard and count. Weekends too. How about that? Make sure
the beach are crisps.
But how would you know the next one had 240 puffs in it just because your one did? But thank you very much indeed, Kay, whether you're male or female, for both of those entries. Something else, perhaps, on my clothes.
The last one, Andy in Croydon. He says, apologies for this being late. He's only just found us. This is about famous
people. All the subjects, it's very encouraging.
There's no apologies required.
They've gone back. No, if you go back over all the subjects, they all remain open and constant.
In the 60s, my dad was stationed at Chelsea Barracks. And when he was working weekends, my mum would take us for an ice cream and a walk through Battersea Park and a meander through Chelsea. One Sunday, we were doing exactly that when my mum tripped and fell face down on Chelsea Bridge. A man ran over, picked her up, gave her his hanky and offered to help us home. I vaguely recall he was with a blonde woman, as me and my sister were five at the time. Many, many years later in a conversation, my mum told us it was Mick Jagger. She still had the hanky, which she had since washed and cleaned. And the reason I now believe her was that on the hanky were the initials MJ, and the hanky was from Avery, the posh tailors in Sloane Square.
Well, Chelsea Bridge, of course, because they lived, didn't they, in the, what's that called, that street they famously lived in, a two-minute walk from there. Cheney Walk they lived in and around there. So how about that? But Mick Jagger's blood was washed out of it.
No, her, it was the mum's blood, wasn't it?
Yeah, but in the telling of the story, that is.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Mick.
It's like your mum in the shirt again.
Exactly. Mick himself, but her blood was washed out of it. But I'd have kept that and said it's Mick Jagger's blood and reversed it. You know how much they'd get? You know how much Americans would pay for their Japanese outbidding them? There's $9,000 you're never going to see again. Well, thank you, everyone. Run the theme tune there, Phil.
1, 2, 3, 4. Treehouse. Climb up, come in, let's cozy down. Wave goodbye to that silly frown as we chase our cares away.
In the treehouse,
the fire's on, it's warm inside. We guarantee you'll be satisfied as we laugh the day away.
In the treehouse.
Take it away, Danny!
Thanks to Louise Napoleon Pepper, the great-granddaughter of Ho Chi Minh. On the other side of London, Wilding has been producing this fiasco. But as always, chiefly yourselves. We'll see you Saturday, everyone.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.